Luke had used a blanket to wrap the man's body, then carried it into the barn, placing it in the tack room where he'd found the blanket and closing the door to keep predators out. In the morning, he would dig a grave. Then he led his horse a quarter mile from the ranch and made camp again. He could still smell the burned-out house and didn't care for that. He had seen and smelled too many buildings that had suffered a similar fate during the Siege of Richmond, when the big guns of Ulysses S. Grant and the Yankee army had pounded the city relentlessly for weeks on end. For a long time after that, he hadn't been able to get the bitter scent of ashes out of his nose. He had learned to ignore the things that bothered him, so he was able to sleep. It was a light slumber, though. He didn't expect Kelly and Dog Eater to return to the scene of their latest crime, but anything was possible. Because of that natural instinctive alertness, Luke was able to come awake instantly when his horse reacted to something he smelled or heard. Luke trusted the horse's senses. As soon as his eyes opened, he reached out and closed his hand around the butt of one of the Remington pistols where his gun belt lay coiled on the ground beside him. He drew the revolver with just the faintest whisper of steel on leather. His thumb looped over the hammer, ready to pull it back as he lay there, listening intently. The sound of a hoof on the ground came from far enough away that he knew it wasn't his horse who had made it. Another horse was out there in the darkness. A glance at the sky told Luke it was about an hour until dawn. He had been asleep for a while. He turned his head where he lay with it pillowed on his saddle. He could see the barn and what was left of the ranch house. The front door had burned, and through the opening that was left, he saw a scattering of orange embers, the only remnants of the blaze that had consumed the inside of the dwelling. Nobody was moving around over there. The sound he'd heard had come from the other direction. Someone was moving up on his trail, and he recalled the feeling of being watched that he'd had the day before. Whoever was following had caught up to him. He heard another faint sound. The follower had left his horse and was advancing on foot. Luke knew that just as well as if he'd been watching the scene in broad daylight. Breathing shallowly, he lay motionless and silent and let the unseen man come closer to him. The hombre moved pretty quietly overall. Luke had to give him credit for that, although not quietly enough to escape notice by a professional manhunter. Finally, the man was close enough for Luke to see his dark shape creeping along. Starlight winked on the barrel of the rifle the man was carrying. If that rifle had swung toward him, Luke would have tipped up the Remington and fired from the ground. The man continued holding the rifle at a slant across his chest, though, instead of getting ready to use it. The figure was only about 5 feet away, lined up on a course that would take him within a step or two of the spot where Luke was lying, when Luke realized suddenly that the man didn't know he was there. The man had seen the burning ranch house and was approaching it stealthily to find out what had happened. Luke was fairly sure he knew the man's identity. He stayed where he was until the man stepped past him, then exploded into movement. As he pushed himself up, his right leg swung around and crashed into the back of the man's knees. Luke landed on top of him and planted a knee in the small of the man's back to pin him to the ground, just in case he was wrong about his identity. He pressed the Remington's barrel against the back of the man's head.
Don't move or I'll blow your brains out.
Don't kill me! Please don't shoot!
Hobie, what in the hell are you doing here?
Mr. Jensen, is that you?
Who did you think?
Luke took the gun away from Hobie's head.
I was afraid it might be one of those bank robbers.
Luke got to his feet. Hobie rolled over and sat up, taking deep breaths in an apparent combination of fear and relief. Luke glared down at the young man.
If I'd been Gunner Kelly or Dog Eater, you'd probably be dead right now. What are you doing out here so far from town?
I wasn't exactly following you.
Except that you dogged my trail all day yesterday after I left, didn't you?
That's sort of the way it worked out. But what I was really doing was following Kelly and the Indian.
Luke suddenly remembered one of the comments Hobie had made back at the livery stable.
Good Lord, you're after them too, aren't you? You said you wanted to be a bounty hunter someday.
It's all over town about the $5,000 reward Mrs. Vanderslice promised you if you caught them and recovered the loot from the bank robbery. That's an awful lot of money.
Is it worth your life?
What?
I said, Is $5,000 worth your life? Because that's what it would have cost you if you'd actually found those two. They'd have killed you as easily as swatting a fly.
Well, I'm pretty tough. But tougher than I look.
Luke reached down with his left hand. Hobie grasped it and Luke hauled the young man to his feet.
Let me ask you a question. Did you know I was there when you walked right past me, Hobie?
Well, I guess I didn't notice you.
Luke lifted an arm and pointed.
Look over there. My horse is picketed 30 feet away. Did you see him while you were creeping along like some phony Indian in a James Fenimore Cooper novel?
No. A while back, I saw something burning up there, and I reckon I was concentrating too much on finding it. I had a hunch maybe Kelly and the Apache had something to do with it.
That's one thing you were right about. The only thing, come to think of it. Go get your horse. I'll show you exactly what sort of men Kelly and Dog Eater are and why you shouldn't be trying to find them.
While Hobie was getting his horse, Luke broke camp, gathering his gear and his bedroll and saddling his horse. By the time Hobie came back leading his mount, Luke was ready to go. They swung up into their saddles and headed for the ranch a quarter mile away. The eastern sky was starting to turn gray by the time they got there. Hobie looked at the burned-out ranch house.
Did they do that?
Actually, no, but they were responsible for it.
Luke dismounted and handed his reins to Hobie. He went into the barn and brought out the body of the slain rancher. He placed the man on the ground and pulled back the blanket enough to reveal his face.
Is that Mr. Anderson?
You tell me. I'm not from around here.
It's got to be him. Nels Anderson. He owned this spread, him and his wife Martha. Where's she? Did they...
She's in the house. They rode up and wanted a trade for some fresh horses. Anderson was agreeable, but they must have gotten a look at Mrs. Anderson. Comely woman, was she?
Yeah, she was real nice looking, and she always treated everybody decent.
Well, Kelly and Dog Eater gut shot Anderson and left him for dead, and then took turns attacking his wife until they got tired of it and cut her throat. Then they swapped horses and rode off, taking all the animals with them.
The sky was light enough for Luke to see how sick Hobie looked.
I don't understand. If the bank robbers left, who set the house on fire?
Anderson did. He passed out for a while and came to and found his wife's body. He knew he wasn't strong enough to bury her. Might not live long enough to bury her. So he took her in the house and put her in their bed. Then he lit the fire. Sort of like a Viking funeral. Except that an adobe ranch house isn't a ship, and we're a hell of a long way from the sea.
How do you know all this?
He told me about it before he died. I don't think he would have had any reason to lie.
This is just awful. Why would anybody do such a thing?
I don't guess you ever ran into anybody like Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater before. Some people are just pure evil, kid. Those two are prime examples of that.
Hobie was silent for a long time, as if he were having trouble comprehending the truth of what Luke had told him.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to see to it that these two people are laid to rest properly. It's not my responsibility, but someone ought to do it. And then I'm going after Kelly and Dog Eater. Somebody's got to do that, too.
I'll help you.
I certainly won't mind you giving me a hand digging those graves.
I'll help you go after Kelly and Dog Eater. We can be partners.
Luke looked at the young man in disbelief.
Kid, if you listened to a word I said, you've got no business getting mixed up in this. Those two would chew you up and spit you out and not even slow down to pick their teeth.
But there's two of them, and one of you. They've got you outnumbered. I know I'm new at the bounty hunting game, but surely it'd help even the odds to have me along.
Luke took off his hat and scrubbed a weary hand over his face.
Hobie, let me tell you about even and odds. Having you come with me wouldn't be like adding one to my side. I'd have to be looking out for you all the time, and I couldn't give all my attention to the job. That would actually subtract from my side and give Kelly and Dog Eater even more of an advantage over me. Do you understand?
Well, maybe. Well, I've never been that good at math.
And one more thing. Bounty hunting isn't a game. It's a dirty, deadly, ugly business. And a lot of men get killed doing it. Men who are a lot tougher and more experienced than you are. Do you have a family?
No, sir. Not really. My folks are dead, and I don't have any brothers or sisters. I reckon Mr. Dunbar and his brother the Marshal are sort of like my adopted uncles.
How about a sweetheart?
Even in the dim light of dawn, Luke could see the blush that spread over Obie's face.
Oh, I've sort of been courting Betsy Jane Hendricks.
Then Betsy Jane would probably cry over your body. And I suspect the Dunbar brothers would mourn your loss, too. You don't want that on your conscience, Obie.
No, I wouldn't, but the reward's $5,000, Mr. Jensen.
Luke took the shovel off his horse and tossed it to Obie, who caught it awkwardly.
Get down and start digging. We'll see if you still feel the same way when we get through.
The sun was a couple of hand widths above the eastern horizon when they finished burying Nils Anderson and his wife Martha. Luke and Obie had taken turns digging until they had two graves ready on top of a small hill a short distance northeast of the house and the barn. Obie hadn't wanted to go into the house, but Luke had insisted. He wanted the young man to see everything Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater had left behind them. The ruins of the house were still too hot to walk on in places, so Luke and Obie had to be careful, but they were able to recover the remains of Mrs. Anderson. Sweat pasted Hobie's shirt to his torso by the time they were finished covering the graves. He leaned on the shovel, took off his hat, and sleeved moisture from his face. He turned his head to watch in disbelief as Luke started walking back toward the horses.
Wait a minute. Aren't you going to say something over them?
Luke paused and looked back.
They both been dead for hours. If there's an afterlife, they're already where they're going to wind up. Nothing we say now can make any difference.
If you believe that, why'd we go to the trouble of burying them? Why not just leave their bodies to be torn apart by coyotes and picked over by buzzards?
A simple matter of respect and dignity. And wherever they are, I think they'll rest easier knowing that didn't happen to what they left behind. But if you want to say something, go right ahead. Don't let me stop you.
Luke heard Obie mutter something behind him as he turned away again.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, amen.
A moment later, the younger man hurried to catch up to him, carrying the shovel.
What do we do now?
You go back to Rio Rojo. I pick up the trail and go after Kelly and Dog Eater.
How can you catch them now? They're bound to be a long way ahead of you.
I know which way they're headed. Even if I lose the trail, I'll find them sooner or later. After a while, they'll get careless. Outlaws nearly always do. They won't go to as much trouble to hide where they've been. Besides, I know most of the trails and the places where men like that hold up. I've been tracking killers and thieves for years.
Seems like they're heading a little south of due west. They keep going far enough in that direction, it'll take them to the border.
Luke smiled.
Borders don't mean a whole lot to men like me. I'm not like a lawman with a set jurisdiction to worry about. I go wherever the trail leads me.
But you can't collect the reward for them in Mexico, can you?
No, but I can put their heads in a sack and bring them back to prove I caught them.
You'd do something like that?
They'd already be dead. They wouldn't care.
What happened to dignity and respect?
Vermin like that don't deserve it. You want anything to eat?
Obie looked startled by the question.
No. Not now.
All right. I'll stop and fix a little breakfast for myself later. Right now, I want to put a few miles behind me.
Luke fixed the hostler with a stern stare.
Goodbye, Obie.
You're really sending me back to Rio Rojo.
That's where you belong. Keep doing a good job, and Dunbar might make you a partner in the livery stable one of these days. Hell, you might wind up marrying Betsy Jane or whatever her name is and take over the business. Go live your life, Obie. There's nothing waiting for you on the other trail but death.
Obie looked like he wanted to argue, but after a moment he mounted up and turned his horse back toward the east.
Good luck, Mr. Jensen.
He waited until the young man had gone several hundred yards before he went to his own horse and swung up into the saddle. Picking up the trail of the outlaws wasn't very difficult. Kelly and Dog Eater were leading several horses now. Luke couldn't tell exactly how many. They'd be able to switch back and forth so that they always had fresh mounts, though, and that would make his job that much more difficult. The one advantage he had was sheer stubbornness. Once he was on a man's trail, he never gave it up. Days or weeks would go by, and Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater would become convinced that they had eluded any pursuers. They would believe that they were safe. And then, sometime when they weren't expecting it, Luke would be there with his guns in his hands. Powder smoke and lead would fill the air more than likely because men like those two never came along peaceably. No, Luke thought as he rode, somebody would die. Somebody always died. 2 days later, Luke was forced to admit that he had lost the trail. There had been too many rocky stretches where the ground was too hard to take hoof prints. But as he had told Hobie, he knew which way Kelly and Dog Eater were going, and he was confident that he could find them. For all its vastness, the frontier was a small place in many ways. Someone somewhere had seen the two outlaws, and would be willing to tell Luke how long ago they'd been there and which direction they'd been going when they left. The landscape was mostly flat and arid, broken up by ranges of small but rugged mountains running north and south. Luke had no trouble going around those mountains or finding passes through them, so they didn't slow him down much. Some of the valleys between the ranges were barren salt flats, while others had small streams running through them at least part of the year, resulting in enough vegetation to support small ranches. Those spreads had to have some sort of supply point, so Luke wasn't surprised when he spotted a few tendrils of chimney smoke rising in the pale blue sky. He followed them until he saw the scattered adobe buildings of a small settlement in the distance. He didn't recall ever being in that exact spot before, and didn't know the name of the place, if it even had one. But there would be at least one saloon or cantina, he thought, and he could ask there about the men he was pursuing. The same would be true at the general store. Kelly and Dog Eater might have stopped for supplies. The town, if you could call it that, consisted of only a dozen buildings. The place seemed to be dozing in the afternoon sun. A few horses stood at the hitch rails, their heads down and their tails flicking lazily. A couple of dogs were sprawled out sleeping. Luke didn't see any people moving around. A faint prickle of unease stirred the skin on the back of his neck. He spotted a building with the word Cantina painted on it and was reminded of Rio Rojo and Magdalena. He didn't expect to be that fortunate again, but would settle for confirmation that Kelly and Dog Eater had come through here. A couple of horses were tied at the hitch rack in front of the building. As Luke rode up and dismounted, he took a good look at the hoof prints left by those animals. Just on the off chance, they were the two horses Kelly and Dog Eater had used to escape from Rio Rojo after the bank robbery. Nothing about the prints distinguished them. It was what Luke expected, but he was in the habit of being careful. He went into the cantina and was immediately grateful for the relative coolness of its dim interior behind the thick adobe walls. It took a moment for his eyes to adjust after being in the bright sunshine outside. Tables were scattered around the room. The bar was in the back. To the right was a big fireplace where an iron pot of something that smelled spicy and delicious simmered over a small fire. A couple of vaqueros sat at one of the tables playing cards without seeming all that interested in the game. Two more men stood at the bar passing a bottle of pulque back and forth. The short, fat bartender stood with his hands resting on the broad, thick planks laid across barrels that formed the bar. Luke walked through the room to the bar. The card players didn't look up at him. The two men at the bar didn't pay any attention to him either. One of them looked like a blacksmith, judging by muscular arms as thick as the trunks of young trees. None of them carried a gun, Luke noted. In the case of the two townsmen, that wasn't really a surprise, but he would have expected the vaqueros to be armed. You never knew when you might need to shoot a snake or something when you were out riding the range. The bartender shifted over to face Luke across the planks. What can I get for you, senor?
Beer will be fine.
The man seemed uneasy, and beads of greasy-looking sweat covered his face.
Are you all right, amigo?
Si, of course. What could be wrong?
I don't know. You tell me.
The bartender filled a mug from one of the barrels and set it on the planks in front of Luke. 4 bits. You should drink up and then ride on out of town, senor. Immediately, Luke knew for sure that something was wrong. The cantina wasn't doing much business. Its proprietor wouldn't be anxious to chase away customers. He took a sip of the beer. Not surprising, it was warm and not very good, but it cut the trail dust out of his throat. He wasn't going to leave until he had asked a few questions, no matter how nervous the bartender was.
Does this town have a name?
This is La Farva, senor. I'm sure you've never heard of it. It doesn't amount to much. No reason for anyone to linger here.
I could use some supplies. I'm looking for a couple men, too.
I have not seen them.
That's odd, since I haven't even told you what they look like yet.
You are the first stranger in La Farva in weeks, senor.
Luke didn't really believe that, but he supposed it could be true. Even if it was, it didn't explain the bartender's nervousness and the deliberate way the other men in the cantina were ignoring him.
One of the two men I'm looking for is white and has red hair. The other is an Apache Indian.
I told you, senor, I have not seen them.
Kelly and Dog Eater might actually be here in this town. All right, I'm obliged to you for your help.
He paid for the unfinished beer.
You're leaving La Farva, senor?
There's no reason for me to stay, is there?
The bartender shook his head.
No, no reason, senor. No reason at all.
Luke turned away from the bar. He planned to ride out, wait until it was dark, and then return to La Farva under the cover of nightfall. He didn't think it would take him long to find out if the two bank robbers were there. He didn't make it out of the cantina. Several figures suddenly loomed in the doorway when he was halfway across the room. They were silhouetted against the light outside, so he couldn't tell much about them except that they wore broad-brimmed, steeple-crowned sombreros. An air of menace came from them just as strongly as the smell of stewing chilies came from the pot in the fireplace. Luke stopped where he was. He heard the bartender muttering under his breath and glanced over his shoulder. The man stood behind the bar crossing himself, which meant his mumbled words were probably a prayer.
That doesn't bode well.
Luke thought maybe he had been wrong about Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater being in La Farva. Somebody sure had the place spooked, though, and it appeared to be these men. They came on into the cantina. Big, fancy rowels on their spurs told Luke they were Mexican. So did the short gray jackets and the tight gray trousers the men wore. Now that he could see them better, he recognized their garb as the uniform of the Rurales, the Mexican police force that patrolled the area along the border. That didn't make any sense. As far as Luke knew, he was still in New Mexico territory. He was pretty sure he hadn't crossed the border. The four newcomers definitely were Rurales, though. They carried rifles and had belted revolvers strapped around their hips. One of the men, a massive, swarthy individual with a thick black mustache, also wore crossed bandoliers of ammunition and had a machete stuck behind his gun belt. The four of them walked straight toward Luke. The man who seemed to be the leader was short and slender, with such a bristling, animated personality that he was trembling a little. Not from fear, but from eagerness. He was ready for trouble. He wanted trouble. The men came to a stop in front of Luke.
Senor, it is not allowed for civilians to be armed in this town.
He gestured toward the Remingtons.
You must hand over your pistoles.
I was just leaving. It wasn't my intention to break the law, so I'll be moving on.
The man shook his head.
There are no exceptions to this rule.
You can watch me ride out if you want. You'll see that I'm not staying in La Farva.
There are no exceptions. And there must be consequences for those who break the law.
With an effort, Luke restrained the impatience and irritation he felt inside him. He'd had run-ins with the Rurales before. While some of the force's members were honest and wanted to bring a semblance of law and order to their country's isolated areas, overall, the Rurales were exceedingly corrupt, supplementing their meager wages with all manner of graft and extortion. Bribery was a way of life with them. momentarily putting aside the fact that they weren't in Mexico and the Rurales had no jurisdiction in La Farva, Luke knew the simplest thing might be to play along with them.
If there's a fine for this infraction, I'd be glad to pay it.
The leader suddenly snapped his rifle around and centered the barrel on Luke's chest. His lips twisted in an arrogant sneer.
You think you can come in here and do as you please, gringo? You think you can throw a little money around and everything will be all right?
Luke fought the urge to reach for his guns. The Rurales had the drop on him. If he pulled the Remingtons, he would get lead in one or two of them. He was sure of that. But at the same time, they would shoot him to pieces. He couldn't allow that to happen. But he couldn't allow them to take his guns, either. He still had a job to do.
Well, have you nothing to say for yourself?
Luke knew that if he surrendered, he would have to stay there as a prisoner, or more likely, he would be executed as a threat to the power held by these men.
I've got something to say.
The rumbling voice came from the man Luke had taken for the local blacksmith. The man turned away from the bar and regarded the Rurales with a fierce scowl on his bearded face.
I say I'm sick and tired of you varmints lording it over us. You got no right to be here. This is our town, not yours.
Silence! How dare you?
I'm an American. That's how come I dare. You can only step on us for so long, you little maggot.
The Rurale jerked his rifle away from Luke to point it at the blacksmith, his face twisted with hate. But Luke was already moving, lunging forward to grab the rifle's barrel and wrench it upward. Luke shoved the rifle backwards, smashing the butt into the leader's narrow chest. The man staggered backwards.
Lopez!
The big Rurale with the crossed bandoliers leaped forward. A machete seemed to spring into his hand and flash toward Luke's throat. The stroke would have lopped Luke's head right off his shoulders if it had landed. The blacksmith tackled Lopez before that could happen. The Rurale was taller, but the two men weighed about the same. The impact drove the Rurale backward and caused the heavy blade to miss Luke by a couple of feet. The other two Rurales tried to bring their rifles to bear, but the struggling men were in the way. Luke palmed out both Remingtons from his cross-draw rig and had the guns ready when Lopez and the blacksmith staggered to the side as they wrestled, clearing his field of fire. The slug tore through the shoulder of one of the Rurales. His rifle fell to the floor. The other man's bullet went wild, causing the bartender to duck frantically as the bullet whined over his head and struck the wall. Luke fired again. The shot shattered the second Rurale's elbow. He dropped his rifle and started running around in circles, momentarily driven mad by the pain. That left the leader, who had gone pale and hunched over when Luke rammed him with the rifle butt, probably breaking one of the man's ribs. The leader clawed at the flap of a holster at his waist, trying to free his revolver. Luke swung the Remington and smacked the barrel against the man's head, sending the gray sombrero flying. The blacksmith had Lopez down on the floor, hands around his throat, beating his head against the ground. He glanced up at Luke.
Get out while you can, amigo!
Luke didn't want to leave his unexpected ally to face the wrath of the Rurales, but he needed to get out of La Farva and back on the trail of Kelly and Dog Eater. The thought that maybe the townspeople could disarm the invaders and lock them up, now that they were starting to fight back, flashed through Luke's mind as he took a step toward the cantina's door. Then he stopped short. More figures poured through the opening. At least half a dozen more charged into the building. All of them were armed, and when they saw Luke standing there with a gun in each hand, they opened fire. Luke would have been hit if the blacksmith hadn't reached out, grabbed his ankle, and jerked his legs out from under him even as the Rurales started shooting. Luke hit the floor hard, but managed to hang on to his guns. Both Remingtons blasted in his hands as he rolled onto his belly. His slugs ripped into the cluster of Rurales and caused them to scatter. Everybody scrambled for cover, including Luke and the blacksmith. They found themselves crouched behind an overturned table. Since both of them were pretty big men, the table wasn't really large enough to shield them, but with all the bullets flying around, it wasn't safe to move.
I'm obliged to you for the help. Reckon you've got yourself in a bad fix, though.
We were already in a bad fix. Have been ever since those blasted deserters rode in and took over a couple days ago. I'm Thomas Sandoval, by the way.
Luke Jensen. You're the local blacksmith, right?
That's right. You must be either a lawman or a bounty hunter.
Luke ducked his head lower as a slug whined close to the crown of his hat.
How'd you know that?
I heard you asking about those two men. You sounded like you were on their trail, and you ain't their friend.
You're right about that. Was the bartender telling the truth about them not being here?
You're the first stranger unlucky enough to ride in since Capitan Almanzar and his men showed up.
Clouds of powder smoke clogged the air inside the cantina. The sharp, acrid reek stung Luke's nose and eyes. Outnumbered and outgunned, he knew the odds of him being able to fight his way out of there were pretty slim. The chances of him surviving if he'd surrendered were even smaller, though. He hated to think that he might have to go down fighting and fail in his mission to bring Kelly and Dog Eater to justice, but he might not have any choice.
Fill those hog legs of yours. We're getting out of here.
How do you figure that?
Luke followed the blacksmith's suggestion and thumbed fresh rounds into the revolvers until all the chambers were full.
Just stay behind me and keep moving.
Before Luke could ask him what he meant by that, Sandoval had grasped the edges of the table. He surged to his feet and charged toward the door. Bullets thudded into the table, but the boards were thick enough to stop them, although splinters flew wildly into the air. Luke was right behind him, snapping shots right and left to make the rurales duck. He heard Sandoval grunt and thought the blacksmith might have been hit, but Sandoval stayed on his feet and kept moving. A couple of rurales tried to get in his way, but he plowed right into them, using the table as a battering ram. The collision knocked the rurales off their feet and sent them flying like ninepins. Sandoval lost his balance too and went down. Instinct made Luke leap over his sprawling form and avoid the fallen table. The door was right in front of him, and his horse was only a few feet away. He could be in the saddle in seconds, racing out of La Farva. Sandoval was struggling to get up. Luke glanced back and saw blood fly from the blacksmith's thigh as a bullet ripped a furrow in it. Sandoval fell again as that leg failed to support his weight. He looked up at Luke.
Go! Get out of here!
Luke knew that leaving Sandoval meant abandoning him to certain death at the hands of the rurales. He jammed his right-hand gun back in its holster, kept the gun in his left fist, roaring and spouting fire, and reached down to offer the blacksmith his other hand.
Come on!
Sandoval reached up and clasped his wrist. Luke hauled him to his feet. They turned toward the hitch rack, but hadn't even taken another step when a fiery lance burned across Luke's left arm. He stumbled, knowing that a slug had grazed him. The wound made his arm go numb. A huge form flew through the cantina door in a diving tackle that smashed Luke to the ground. The big rurale called Lopez was back in the fight. Fists like sledgehammers pounded into Luke as more rurales bolted out of the cantina and surrounded Sandoval. Booted feet kicked and stomped, and rifle butts rose and fell in brutal blows. Luke had dropped his left-hand gun when the bullet creased that arm. His other gun was in its holster, and he couldn't reach it with the bull-like Lopez on top of him, pummeling him relentlessly. A red haze floated in front of Luke's eyes as Lopez began strangling him.
No, don't kill them!
Faintly, as if from far away, Luke heard a high-pitched voice. The red haze was quickly becoming a black tide that couldn't be held back. It swept over him and washed him away into nothingness. The pain told Luke he was still alive. It started in his head and radiated all through his body. His throat was sore, and every rasping breath he took made it hurt worse. His brain was pretty foggy, but gradually his thoughts began to clear. Instinct had made him keep his eyes closed and lie motionless. He didn't know what was going on around him, and he didn't want to tip off his captors that he had regained consciousness until he had a better idea what the situation was. He remembered the yelling that had been going on as he passed out. Now that he wasn't being choked halfway to death and could think a little straighter, he realized that somebody had been screaming orders not to kill him and the blacksmith. It must have been the little commander of the rurales. Capitan Almanzar was what Sandoval had called him, Luke remembered. Almanzar hadn't stopped his men from killing them out of the goodness and mercy of his heart. No doubt he wanted them to die slowly and painfully, probably in full view of the townspeople, so their deaths would serve as examples to the citizens of La Farva. Almanzar would want everyone to see what happened to anybody who dared to defy him. To Luke, that meant there was still a chance to turn the tables on the rurales. As long as he was alive, he wasn't going to give up hope. He was pragmatic enough to realize, however, that the odds against him would be mighty high. As he'd been thinking, he'd had time to take inventory of his body. He hurt like hell, but he was pretty sure everything still worked. He was lying on something hard, either a dirt or stone floor, he guessed. He opened one eye to a narrow slit. That little slice of vision was enough to show him a rock wall and a man's blood-stained trouser leg. Luke opened his eye a little more and saw Sandoval sitting with his back against that wall. The blacksmith's eyes were closed, but his massive chest rose and fell.
Thomas.
Luke lifted his head and opened his other eye. He and Sandoval were inside a room with a small window in one wall and a heavy-looking door in the opposite wall. It wasn't a jail cell, although it might as well have been. Neither of them would be able to fit his shoulders through that tiny window. Sandoval hadn't stirred.
Thomas.
The blacksmith's eyes opened. He gave his great shaggy head a little shake as he sat up straighter.
So, you're not dead. I didn't think you were, but I wasn't sure.
I wasn't sure myself for a minute there.
With an effort, Luke pushed himself up until he was sitting against the wall opposite Sandoval.
Oh, where are we?
Little room in back of the store. Man named Lloyd Halligan owns it. El Capitan made him clean it out so the Rurales could use it to lock up anybody who didn't toe the line to suit them. Huh. We're the first occupants.
They rode in a couple days ago, you said?
Yeah. When they rode in, Almanzar started spouting a lot of big talk about how the governments of Mexico and the United States made a deal and moved the border. He claimed the town was across the line now, in Mexico. That was bull, and we all knew it. The border's a good 15 miles south of here. There's no way the U.S. would give up that much territory. Even if they did, there'd have been so much hoopla we would have heard about it.
You're right about that. I was over in Rio Rojo just a few days ago, and there's a telegraph office there. They would have heard the news.
Sandoval scratched his beard.
Yeah, it didn't take us long to figure out that Almanzar and his troops had deserted from the Rurales and crossed the border to turn outlaw. Now, it wouldn't take much. Those Rurales are only a whisker less crooked than the banditos they chase.
Sometimes not even that much. I suppose they took over the town anyway, even though nobody believed their story.
That's right. We're peaceful folks here. We weren't any match for a dozen well-armed border scum like that. They beat up a few men, threatened everybody else, and people fell in line. They didn't have any choice. Almanzar has patrols keeping an eye out to make sure nobody leaves.
He's not as watchful about people riding in. Nobody challenged me. I didn't even see anyone when I rode in until I went into the cantina.
I suspect his men have orders to lie low if anybody shows up. Let them come in, then close the trap behind them to make sure they don't leave. That's what happened to those two vaqueros who were in the cantina. They drifted in this morning. El Capitan's men disarmed them. They didn't put up any fight. They just want to keep their heads down and stay alive as long as they can.
Can't blame them for that. This Capitan Almanzar, he's the little banty rooster who was haranguing me in the cantina.
That's right.
What do you think his plans are in the long run?
I don't know. I'd say he plans to loot the town, but La Farva doesn't exactly have a lot of money in it. Nobody right here has ever gotten rich. From the looks of it, the main thing Almanzar's interested in is strutting around like he's the cock of the walk.
A man who would be king.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. He'll stay here and enjoy it as long as he can keep his men in line. If they get too restless, though, he'll have to move on to some greener pastures.
And he'll wipe out everyone in the town when he does.
I'm afraid you're right.
I suppose he has plans for us sooner than that.
Oh, yeah. At sundown, he's going to have us taken out and shot.
Sundown? Isn't it customary to have executions at dawn?
El Capitan's too impatient for that. Besides, he wants to make it clear to everyone right away that anybody who crosses him will come to a bad end. After we're dead, it wouldn't surprise me if he hacked our heads off and stuck them up on posts for everybody to see.
An effective tactic for cowing the populace into submission. It goes all the way back to biblical times.
Huh. You're an educated man.
Self-educated for the most part. Unfortunately, that doesn't do us much good in this situation.
Luke gestured at the blacksmith's bloody leg.
How badly are you hit?
A couple deep grazes. It's one on my leg and another one that took a chunk of meat out of my side. I lost some blood, and they hurt like hell, but I reckon I'd be all right, if not for the fact that they're going to shoot us to doll rags in another hour or so. How about your arm?
Luke flexed his left arm. The feeling had come back to it, so he could move it again. It was stiff and sore from the bullet crease, though.
Like you, I'd be fine under different circumstances.
I'm curious. How much damage did we do to the Ruralis?
A wolfish grin spread across Sandoval's bearded face.
You killed a couple of them and wounded three or four others. And from the way Almanzar's moving around so carefully, I figured he's got a cracked rib. He acted like he was in pain every time he took a breath.
Good. I hope he suffers the torments of the damned.
If ever anybody deserved it, it's him.
The two men were silent for a few minutes. Luke didn't know what Sandoval was thinking, but the wheels of his own brain were turning rapidly as he tried to figure out some move they could make.
Almanzar had a dozen men, you said?
A dozen counting him.
Two of them are dead. That leaves 10. And I know at least a couple of the men I shot were hit badly enough that they wouldn't be any good in a fight. That brings the number down to 8, and some of them are injured.
That's still 4-1 odds. Plus, they're armed and we're not. If you're thinking about trying to jump them when they take us out of here, I don't think we'd stand much of a chance.
How many able-bodied men are there in town?
The blacksmith rubbed his jaw and frowned in thought.
18 or 20, I reckon. Counting those two vaqueros and everybody over the age of 15 or 16.
Probably not enough. Not when they're unarmed and facing at least half a dozen rifles.
Well, they might be able to overpower Almanzar's men eventually. But some good men would get killed doing it.
If they wait, Almanzar's liable to kill them off one by one anyway.
That's true. When you're asking people to almost certainly die right now as opposed to maybe dying later on.
I know. It's not a risk most of them would want to run. I'll be damned if I'm going to stand in front of a wall and just let those deserters shoot me, though.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Would say we jump them as soon as we get a chance and make them fight to kill us.
That's what I...
He forgot all about the aches and pains scattered throughout his body and came to his feet. On the other side of the makeshift cell, Thomas Sandoval did the same as the door started to swing open. Luke was ready to throw himself forward as soon as the door was open wide enough. He knew their captors would be prepared for trouble, but even so, he thought there was a chance he might be able to get his hands on a rifle before he was cut down. If he did, that could change everything.
Mr. Jansen! Mr. Jansen, are you in there?
Hobie?
A slender figure in a battered old hat pushed the door open the rest of the way. Hobie had found a serape somewhere and draped it around himself, hiding the work shirt and the suspenders he wore. He had his Henry rifle in his hands. Luke held out a hand to stop Sandoval from attacking the young man.
We gotta hurry. I knocked out the fella standing guard in the store, but I don't know how long it'll be before he wakes up.
You know this young fella, Jansen?
I do. And I have to admit, right now, I'm mighty glad to see him.
A pleased grin flashed across Hobie's face.
See, I told you we ought to be partners. Come on.
The three of them hurried out of the back room and into the general store. Sandoval limped on his wounded leg. He didn't want to hold up the others.
Don't let me slow you down. If I can't keep up, you just go on without me.
Lean on me if you have to, Thomas. We won't leave you behind.
A beefy, middle-aged man with white hair and a mustache stood behind the counter in the store. He looked scared, probably because of the Rurale who was stretched out senseless on the floor in the business's main aisle.
I don't know who you are, young feller, but you're gonna get us all killed.
The only chance you have is to fight back, mister. Keep letting those renegades have their way, and all it'll get you sooner or later is a bullet.
Tom, have you gone loco? We can't fight those Ruralis.
Sorry, Lloyd, but if you won't fight, at least stay out of our way. Jansen and I need guns.
He limped toward a case containing several rifles.
You can't... Oh, go ahead. Maybe you're right. Maybe this is the only chance we got.
He stood up straighter.
Hell, I'll take one myself. Nothing to lose, is there?
Nothing but our lives. And those aren't worth a damn thing if we let animals like Almanzar and his men run roughshod over us.
Lloyd opened the gun case and handed Winchesters to Luke and Sandoval, and then took one down for himself.
Got plenty of ammunition behind the counter. Come on!
He took a box of 44 shells off a shelf and opened it. The men gathered around the counter and fed ammunition through the rifle's loading gates until the weapons were full, then stuffed more shells into their pockets. The Rurale started to stir and let out a little moan. Kicking him in the head was a brutal thing to do, but Luke wasn't going to lose much sleep over anything that happened to the invaders. He wasn't going to kill the prisoner out of hand, and that seemed merciful enough to him.
It would probably be a good idea to tie and gag him and lock him in the back room while we have the chance. How did you manage to get the drop on him, Hobie?
I stole this serape off a clothesline behind somebody's house. When I came in here, I had my head down so the guard couldn't see my face. And I kept my rifle hidden behind my leg until I was close enough to clout him with it. I told you I'm tougher than I look, Mr. Jensen.
I'd have to say you're right about that. You're sneaky, too. You've been following me ever since I left the Anderson Ranch, haven't you? You just did a better job of it, that's all.
Well, I'll admit, I thought I'd lost your trail a few times, but I stuck with it.
Hobie, do you know where the rest of the Rurales are?
I saw some of them going into the cantina, but I don't know about the others.
Luke thought about it for a moment.
It doesn't really matter. They're going to be coming to us pretty soon.
Yeah, to fetch us for the firing squad.
That's right. All we have to do is sit back and wait.
Lloyd Halligan tied and gagged the unconscious Rurale, as Luke had suggested, then went to the front of the store to keep watch.
How did you know we needed help?
When I came inside of the town, I thought I'd better stop and see if anything was going on before I just rode in. I got a pair of field glasses in my saddlebags, so I used them to check the place.
It appears that once again I didn't give you enough credit. Go on.
Well, I saw some sort of ruckus in the street, and when I took a closer look through the glasses, I realized you were in the middle of it. I watched while they dragged you into the store here along with this other fella.
Thomas Sandoval.
Oh, Hobie McCullough.
Luke realized it was the first time he had heard Hobie's last name.
Anyway, I recognized the men you'd been fighting with as Rurales, and that really threw me for a loop, because I was pretty sure I was still in New Mexico territory. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I didn't want to just ride in bold as brass. That seemed like a good way to get in trouble, so I decided to sneak into town. I stayed out of sight and eavesdropped some people talking at the livery stable. That helped me figure out you were in trouble and likely locked up here in the store's back room. Then I heard that you were going to be executed at sundown. I couldn't let that happen.
Nobody would have blamed you if you'd just ridden away. This wasn't your responsibility, and you were risking your life by going up against those Rurales.
Hobie shrugged.
Maybe. But it seemed like the thing to do.
I really did underestimate you. But I won't again. I give you my word on that.
Were they really going to stand you up in front of a firing squad?
They certainly were. We'll see how they like it when their would-be victims shoot back.
Amantar's on his way with three of his men. The other three are rousing folks out of the buildings and lining them up in the street at gunpoint.
The play must have its audience, even if it's a captive one. Almanzar wants everyone to see what he thinks is about to happen.
Once the lead starts to fly, those folks are going to be in danger. We need to hit the Rurales as hard and fast as we can, so the fight won't go on long.
Surprise is our greatest ally. Hobie, are you sure you're ready for this?
Hobie's face was pale under its tan, but he nodded.
I won't let you down, Mr. Jensen.
After what you've already done today, I didn't think that you would. Now let's set a plan. I'll go out first. The rest of you come fast behind me and spread out. Aim for Almanzar and the men with him first, then the ones guarding the townspeople. That'll give the citizens a few seconds to run for cover anyway.
Good luck.
Lord help us.
Luke jerked the door open and stepped out onto the store's high porch that doubled as a loading dock. As he brought the Winchester to his shoulder in a smooth, swift, but unhurried movement, he saw Capitan Almanzar stop in his tracks and stare at the building. Shock made the Rurale officer's eyes widen.
Madre de Dios!
He fumbled with the holstered pistol on his hip. Luke fired. He tried for Almanzar's chest, but one of the Rurales lunged forward. His shoulder struck Almanzar and knocked him aside. The .44 slug from Luke's rifle smashed into the Rurale's body and twisted him around. Luke worked the rifle's lever and fired again as more shots erupted from his three allies as they emerged from the store. Luke's second shot punched into the belly of the man he had winged a moment earlier and dropped him to the ground. He tried to draw a bead on Almanzar again, but the captain had retreated behind the other two men with him and found some cover. Gunfire filled the street. A slug whipped past Luke's head. Luke levered the Winchester and swung the barrel, tracking a man who bolted for cover. His bullet clipped the running man on the hip and spilled him off his feet. Luke was about to finish off the fallen Rurale when one of La Farva's citizens, a middle-aged woman who was screaming at the top of her lungs, dashed in front of his target. With an effort, Luke held off on the trigger. The Rurale used his rifle as a crutch and lunged awkwardly to his feet. He grabbed the woman from behind and dragged her in front of him as a shield. With his left arm around her throat, he lifted his rifle and fired it one-handed at the store. The bullet struck the porch post to Luke's right.
Hunt some cover! Hobie, behind that rain barrel!
Hobie leaped down the stairs at the end of the porch and crouched behind the rain barrel sitting there. Lloyd Hannigan ducked back inside the store and started firing through the broken window. Sandoval leaped to the ground, but his wounded leg collapsed under him when he landed and dumped him. He rolled desperately to the side as slugs kicked up dust around him, coming up on hands and knees and scrambling behind a parked wagon. Luke jumped off the porch and landed in the wagon's empty bed. He dropped to one knee behind the seat and fired at the remaining Rurales, who kept blazing away as they retreated toward the building across the street. Another man followed the example of the one who had grabbed the woman and snatched up a terrified boy to use as a hostage.
Hold your fire!
With the boy and the woman in danger, they had to stop shooting. But then a man ran out of the nearby livery stable with a pitchfork in his hands. He lunged at the Rurale holding the kid.
Let that boy go!
The citizens of La Farva had finally had enough. They were fighting back against the renegades who had invaded their town. The Rurale turned his head at the shout, but he didn't have a chance to defend himself. The liveryman plunged the sharp tines deep into his back. The Rurale twisted, trying unsuccessfully to arch away from the agonizing pain. His finger spasmed on the trigger of his gun. The shot hit the liveryman and knocked him backward. The boy kicked loose, dropped to the ground, and streaked away. That left the wounded Rurale in the open, and a split second later, he was blown to hell. Luke, Hobie, Sandoval, and Lloyd Halligan had all drawn a bead on him, and their deadly accurate rounds tore through him and dropped a quivering bloody heap into the dirt. The female hostage recovered from her hysteria and grabbed the barrel of her captor's rifle. Half mad with pain and anger, he clouted her on the side of the head with his free hand and knocked her away from him. Realizing too late the mistake he had made, he turned and tried to run. Before he could take a step, he was lifted off his feet by the slugs that smashed into him from the rifles held by Luke and Hobie. One Rurale had made it to the building, but he backed out of the door even quicker than he went in, throwing his rifle aside and thrusting his hands into the air. An elderly townsman brandishing an ancient flintlock pistol backed him into the street.
You better keep your hands up, damn your hide! You didn't find this old pistol of mine, 'cause I had it hid! It'll blow a hole in you just like it did your granddaddy at San Jacinto!
Keep him covered, old-timer!
Luke scanned the street, looking for more enemies. He counted quickly. 4 gray uniformed bodies sprawled in the street, plus the one who had surrendered to the old man. Luke didn't see any other threats. 2 of the Rurales were missing, though. Capitan Almanzar and the giant Lopez were nowhere in sight. Luke stood up. He squinted against the clouds of powder smoke that still hung in the air. There were injured people to check on, wounds to patch up, and prisoners to secure, along with the one they already had locked up. La Farva was free again.